The Ironed Trouser, Why 93% of Scientists Are Atheists, Depending on Who You Ask, by Adam Rutherford. Atheism and science should make good, comfortable, spooning bedfellows. Even though they're totally separate types of thing, the former being a position, the latter a process, the casual assumption is that they should skip hand in hand through gloriously evolved fields of reason. Those who oppose either or both like to conflate the two for a convenient jab-swing combo to pulverise rational thought in favour of religious fervour. Science must be bad because it lies so comfortably with godlessness. The term scientific atheism is tossed around sometimes, but I don't really know what it means. Atheism exists fully independently of science. As the onus is on the faithful to demonstrate the existence of Yahweh, Allah, Thor, Hanuman, or whoever, atheists need do nothing at all to be devoted to their stance. Scientific atheism is equivalent to saying ironed trousers. Like science, ironing is a process which can be applied to all manner of items, dresses, shirts, even underpants if one were so inclined. It straightens things out, makes them fit together nicely. Fortunately, trousers exist and function perfectly adequately without ironing, and atheism exists without the backup from science, but it does make it look a bit smarter. In the 20th century, there were several attempts to quantify the overlap of eggheads who were godheads. In 1916, psychologist James Loiber found that out of 1,000 scientists, 60% were agnostic or atheist. 80 years later, the experiment was repeated and the results were virtually identical. Within a different sample, only 7% of the members of the American National Academy of Sciences indicated a belief in God. More recently, a survey of the fellows of the UK's most august scientific body, the Royal Society, revealed only 3.3% who believed in God. As with so many surveys, it depends on who you ask and how you phrase the question. Is the Royal Society a representative sample of scientists? Oh Lord, Mary Mother of Jesus, heavens to Betsy, Christ on a bicycle, no. How so, no? For starters, only 5% of the Royal Society fellows are women, something like 10 times lower than the general scientific community. A recent survey indicated that Royal Society fellows are 38% grumpier than other scientists. Incidentally, this survey was entirely made up by me for the purposes of making a glib point. Many fellows are so old, it's difficult to ascertain if they're even alive, let alone God-fearing. It is possible that this gives them an inside track on the big answer, but one would have to untimely wrest them from their peace to find out. But what is clear is that those of a scientific bent are more likely to also lack religious faith. Why should this be? Because the process by which scientific knowledge is revealed is one that requires logic and rational thought at every stage. Any researcher will tell you that there are plenty of moments that necessitate creative guesswork or simply having a wild stab in the dark, but in general these moments are massively outnumbered by the grinding out of small, incremental steps towards better theories. Science, as a way of acquiring knowledge, certainly predisposes one to ruling out the inconsistencies and irrationality inherent in religion. Furthermore, science explains how things are. There is a nonsensical variant of the argument from ignorance, referred to as the God of the gaps. Very simply, where there is a hole in knowledge, insert God as the explanatory force. It's nonsensical because, historically, it was gaps all the way down. What science does very well is fill them in. To those gapists, I say, just because you don't understand something doesn't mean I can't. So there are two robust reasons why scientists are less likely to be religious. But a much more interesting question is why any scientists are religious. Opponents sometimes screech that scientists have to have faith in science itself. This is true in a sense, but at least the robustness of the scientific method is such that a belief that the system works is based on countless data points which show it to be reliable. Where once there was ignorance, science has inserted knowledge. Having faith requires an absence or ignorance of scientific evidence, a belief that is not supported by a logical progression. That's why it's called faith. One might be tempted to suggest that scientists who believe in God are not very good scientists. Empirically, this is simply not true. And I'm not talking about the preachers of that creationist fig leaf they call intelligent design. No, there are plenty of good scientists who are religious, who have faith, who see the laws of nature, evolution, gravity, the whole damned universe, as a manifestation of a non-interventionalist divine force that now acts like an absentee landlord. He sets up the rules of the cosmos and then clears off forever. These people are technically deists. I don't really see the point of this stance, but I accept that the cultural trappings of religion can be hard to shake. It may be one of my own bountiful shortcomings, but I've not stumbled across a convincing argument for this apparent internal conflict that doesn't rely on a form of compartmentalisation of one's rational and irrational minds. And that's fine. Everyone, even the most hardline rationalist, behaves in absurdly irrational ways. It's the nature of humankind. I couldn't believe in God any less. It makes no sense to me, and more importantly, my trust in science's extraordinary explanatory abilities renders the need for divine answers superfluous. All things are potentially explicable without recourse to the supernatural. But that doesn't mean I exist in a purely rational way. I've spent the last 28 years supporting a football team who in that time have won a grand total of 2 trophies, both before I was 7. All because of the random cosmic happenstance of having emerged into the world in a hospital lift in the small market town of Ipswich. And even so, I'll be a tractor boy till my cardiac myocytes twitch their last. Is that rational? No, it's not even very much fun most of the time, goddammit. While some consider it to be a weakness, the true strength of science is that it is always and willingly subject to being wrong. What scientific truth is right today may yet prove to be incorrect or need to be modified in incremental steps towards a better, truer truth. If the supernatural turned out to be real, with God and angels and demons and unicorns and behemoths and whatever else, then it would instantly stop being super and start being just natural. At that point, scientists would want to know what the hell was going on. I like to fantasise that God does exist and what he and I might talk about. In the extremely unlikely event that he did appear before me, it would indeed be a revelation. Who knows, I might even indulge in a bit of glossolalia. But once I'd reassembled my lower jaw and stopped gibbering, composed myself and apologised to my devout Catholic gran for giving her such a hard time over all these years, the realisation would be that although much of what we assume to be true is not, the revelation would simply open up a new, mouth-breathingly exciting branch of science. If he did make everything, quarks and all, then surely he'd be pretty excited to let us mortals make some new discoveries. Sorry about all that ardent non-believing I've been doing. By giving me a choice, you didn't really give me much of a choice. Oh, don't sweat it. Any questions? I'm in a bit of a rush. I've got an urgent dice game to play with Einstein. Right. Did Maradona handle the ball in the 1986 World Cup finals against England? And of God, my divine arse. Nothing to do with me, mate. It's okay, I forgive you. Listen, loads of questions to ask you, like, what have you been up to for the last 13 billion years? And what the hell is the point of Belgium? But I'm just going to stick to the facts. What are you made of? Well, precise details of this section of the conversation were unavailable at the time of going to press. Right. Wow. That explains why, in 10,000 years of history, we haven't been able to categorically verify one single instance of your existence. Yeah, sorry about that. We're going to need some new technology and a seriously colossal grant to start researching this. Anything else? One last thing. Would you mind clearing up the thou shalt not kill commandment? There seems to be a bit of confusion about it here on Earth. Bye. One can but dream. What scientists are very good at is asking questions. The scientific method provides a framework that allows us to ask those questions rather than accept assertions. Take the example of the great and never-ending shouting match between those who understand evolution and those who are unencumbered by the gifts of fact or reason, creationists. A literal interpretation of the biblical account of creation fails at every possible rational or scientific question one might put to it. It is an assertion of truth based on nothing other than a fiction. 1,000 years ago, it wouldn't have been all that easy to demonstrate how creationism is wrong. It existed largely in a knowledge vacuum, devoid of any evidence to the contrary, or any understandable evidence at all. The age of the Earth was unknown. The fact of evolution was unobserved. And the idea of a high-throughput automated fluorescence DNA sequencing machine was a matter for the dunking stool. For almost every question one could ask, the answer would be, we don't know. For many years, biblical creation was the only explanation. How were they to know that snakes have almost none of the physical attributes required to talk? But by the first half of the 19th century, well before Charles Darwin graced us with evolution by natural selection, plenty of evidence had accrued that indicated that creationism could not be right. A whole steaming heap of wrong, in fact. And then, in 1859, Darwin published On the Origin of Species. In it, he outlined one big idea that not only fitted the observed evidence about the age of the Earth and the process of evolution, but made predictions about what we would find next, many of which turned out to be very right. It's not so much that creationism is wrong, which it most certainly is, but that evolution by natural selection is so much righter. So right, in fact, that it's now the only sensible way of understanding the origin of species on Earth. With varying degrees of wrongness, other ideas and theories have come and, via the bypass of experiment and the slip road of failure, gone. It now seems unlikely that any theory will come along that could wholesale replace natural selection. But should that happen, scientists would be committed to investigating it fully. Currently, and for the foreseeable future, evolution by natural selection is categorically, emphatically, and by far the best explanation for understanding the breathtaking diversity of life on Earth. Evolution, as a scientific fact, is nothing much to do with being an atheist. It has a lot to do with ruling out medieval religious dogma as childish hangovers from an ignorant past. But the process by which the fact of evolution was realised, tested, and modified has a lot to do with the revelation of knowing that there is probably no God. And that is science's greatest strength, as a way of knowing. It's an unending pathway towards knowledge and enlightenment about how stuff works. It's a thought process based on observation, experimentation, rational thinking, and logic. There's no recourse to jumping to conclusions or leaps of faith. There is dogma in science, but it is always subject to change. When it's wrong, it's wrong, and we need to modify our preconceptions and develop a new and better way of tackling the problem. That's why science is the best way of knowing how things truly are, and as such, it's a way of thinking that should have the effect of eroding faith. So whatever the real number of egghead godheads is, the fact that there are any at all reveals not a weakness of science, nor a strength of religion, but the fallibility of people.